Hey, it's Elisa Monjadas, Managing Director of Stories Bureau, and this is my co-host, Creative Director of Stories Bureau.
Hey, everyone, I'm Corey Grushka, and this is B2B Creatively, where we want to talk about all things B2B creative, from trends to best practices, campaigns that succeeded.
So that all of us together can learn how to B2B creatively.
If you're a marketer, you'll learn how to be more creative, and if you're a creative, we're going to make you more strategic.
Corey, you have such a unique background. Like, we've talked about my background, but we need to tell everyone that you're not just a former lawyer, because that's super interesting, but you were also an animator and went to art school. So what is one thing you've learned along the way from your art school background that now translates to B2B marketing?
Communication. I was an artist first, then an animator, then a designer, then I went to law school. And I think the thing that I learned that I think translates the most to B2B, and I'm sure our guest today is going to be speaking to this as well, is really how to communicate about creative. Because creative is like a super ephemeral thing, very hard to describe. But I think a traditional art education, more than anything, really equipped me, and I think all designers, to really speak to it and influence it and really direct.
Ronnie, you also went to art school. What is something that you use every day in your B2B marketing that you learned in art school?
Respecting the process, like the process in design, trusting the process that by iterating and experimentation, absolutely, that's become a major touch point in my role as a designer, as a creative director, as manager, is the process needs to happen to arrive at something that's really strong and effective and meaningful.
Oh, I can't wait to dive into this conversation.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Lajan, creative director on the brand and content services team at Equinix, the world's digital infrastructure company.
So, Ronnie, we've been working with you for quite a while now, and you all just went through a major rebrand at Equinix.
Before we say it's a big thing, we should just like talk about Equinix, because it's no joke, right? 13,000 employees, Fortune 500.
$8 billion in revenue.
Yeah, it's a big deal, rebrand.
Yeah, it's a global infrastructure company. A lot of data centers all over the world. Long history, over 25 years in business, and it has a global impact and a global reach, working with customers and businesses all over the planet.
And you were a contractor for Equinix before you came on full-time?
Yeah, so I started as a contractor in 2020, actually, right around the start of the pandemic. They actually needed design work for some swag, and I just joined like on an ad hoc basis, hourly and as a contractor, and then it spiraled into many more hours on an ongoing basis, and ultimately joining the company officially full-time about 14, 15 months ago.
So had you done a lot of B2B stuff before then, or was your portfolio just like a cool portfolio and they were like, this is a person that could do really cool swag kind of situation?
So I have experience in true, like what you might think of like design agency background, where you're designing annual reports and creating campaigns and working for education, where you're really trying to speak directly to an individual. And then I also had experience in working in packaging. So my audience was like kids and parents who are buying stuff for kids. And then ultimately, with like B2B, I found that you're still speaking to an individual, but you're speaking more towards a group of individuals, almost like a hive mind of an audience, where you're thinking how, like in terms of a persona and how you're trying to appeal to them or connect with them. Also working at a global company like this, I'm not designing this just for my own personal edification. I'm really thinking about how this fits into how this represents the company. So it was a really a little bit of a pivot, not necessarily a completely different way of approaching it, but a pivot in design thinking.
I can say from working with you, Ronnie, I feel like something that's unique about you is not unique, but something special, something special about you is that you really do that with everything you design. Like, you're not just like churning things out. You always have like a rationale. You're always thinking about that end user. And it's refreshing because sometimes for all of us, it's easy to get into the grind and just like churn things out. But you're always like taking those like extra moments to stop and think, how do you do that? Like, what helps you to remember your audience?
Process is really important for me in design and for my team and how we arrive at design solutions, how we, you know, it's okay to push things too far and come back. One of the things that early on, like even before the brand evolution, I know I was making a conscious choice to really push things as far as they could go from a brand standpoint.
With the old brand, you're saying?
Yeah, with the old brand and with the acquisition of Packet and with Equinix Metal and just trying to be experimental but mindful. Experimental but still, as to your point, of being able to explain why something works, being able to explain why design is successful and speaking about it, you know, from the composition, the color, the illustration choice, who it's really trying to speak to, who it's trying to attract. When you can approach design as not just, oh, I made that decision just because, you just have a much better relationship with the design you're creating. It's not just being shipped out. It's not churned. It's crafted.
Yeah, I feel the same way. What's your take on B2B creative? I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts. So like, it used to be in B2B that marketing that like it wasn't that important because the brand was the gatekeeper. It wasn't a participant in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But I think with the internet, with the web, with social, with all these like explosion of channels, like brands are just floating out there and you have to make an impact. And I feel like you see a lot more impactful design, a lot more borrowing from B2C.
Yeah.
What's your take though? Like, have you reflected on that or do you have thoughts on that?
I think that the same design principles apply both to B2B and B2C. Is it an effective message? Is it memorable? Does it stand out? With B2B though, however, I think your responsibility is to think how design fits into a strategic story and a brand narrative. And with our rebrand, that's been carefully crafted in terms of how we're trying to communicate to our audiences. What's unique about Equinix, I found, at least, you know, in my experience, is that the audience is really very diverse in terms of where does it fall in the B2B like realm because of the work that I've done on deploy.equinix.com and area like and previously Equinix Metal. Some of that was like almost like a funnel. Like it started at B2B and then it came down to B2C, like the way it actually gets pushed out there. As far as how I've seen it in kind of the market, I've seen it kind of grow up a little bit. You're expected, at least in marketing, to be, I don't even like the word innovative, but to really push the envelope and create something that people connect to. Now with social channels and the competition of all the social channels and how video is playing such a bigger role, you're expected to create something that people will stop and look at. And that's another reason
that thumb stoppers.
Exactly. That's another reason that illustration has played in such a pivotal role in our rebrand. People are used to consuming a lot of imagery, but illustration is bespoke, it's unique, it's tailored. And so I think I've seen opportunities in our design process and our rebrand to really leverage that as a tool to separate us and make us unique and stop the scroll and connect to the audience and have people use their imagination, like, well, what does this mean? Or, oh, I could infer that. And that goes back to the original design principles about, you know, creating a visual metaphor that somebody connects to.
We have a new person on our team, and I was just explaining to her your illustration style, like how it all has meaning behind it. And I pulled up a bunch of your illustrations in a row. And I was like, see how this one looks like traffic? It's because of like the CICD pipelines. And like, see how this one has like buildings? It's because it's talking about infrastructure. And see how this one, and it was so cool. I've never even thought about it like that. I just like, and it was like all laid out for me to explain the illustrations. And that's
illustration as visual metaphor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, look, so that we've effectively segued into the rebrand, but what I'll tell you, so for the audience's benefit, the Equinix brand, you know, was a very traditional brand. It was conservative, but clean, sophisticated, but not like aggressive in any way, not overly designy, you could say. Mm-hmm. When I first saw the first look at the rebrand, I'd heard about a rebrand. I was like, cool. But when I first saw the first look, I was like, interesting. You know, like it was not what I expected at all. It was very progressive from a design perspective. It was, and I was like, okay, I'm curious to see how this rolls out. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how you transition, because it was a pretty dramatic right turn from where the brand was. To me, I loved it. And it was like a real pleasant surprise that we were going to get to work on a brand that looks like that. What was the thought process in going from where it was to visually where it is today?
I'd say you kind of did a good summation of where the brand was to date before the brand evolution. And I think that brand was in use for maybe 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. And when things are put out in the marketplace and you have repetition of types of deliverables, it can be hard to push the creative envelope or to differentiate because you're producing and there's so much time that has passed. I will say there's a tremendous amount of equity in our identity, our logo, word mark, and brand mark. And we had the great benefit of that because of our recognition in the market. The challenge became, well, we know that that is sort of sacred and that we're not redesigning our logo, but everything else for the vast majority it was on the table. In terms of how that was approached, I think we knew what was successful and what was working, and we knew where we wanted to push things. Being that we had it for 10 years, we had gotten lots of feedback and lots, and also done a tremendous amount of research in the market and research within the company, outside the company, talking to different stakeholders, looking at how we could leverage a new brand in the marketplace and in marketing in general. And so we worked with, collaborated with an agency, and I like to think that we went too far and came back. I really do. Like during the process.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
It was really important. I think in the first couple rounds, it's different being on the other side, right? Like I'm a designer, creative director, and giving feedback is an important part of that role. But when it's kind of like something that you have to live with, you're really close to it. It's kind of like going in the back of a kitchen at a restaurant and saying, hey, can I watch you prepare that meal and make sure it's prepared the way I want it or the way I'd like it to be prepared. But it was really kind of an amazing challenge. And fortunately, we iterated quickly during that process. The agency iterated quickly. Tremendous dialogue, tremendous collaboration. We utilized a lot of people on our team to weigh in. It was something where a new brand, you don't want to just shove into somebody's lap and say, you have to use this, and that's the way it is. Part of our big mission through this brand evolution was to create a lot of engagement and dialogue and have people being brought across and involved and brought into the conversation.
It allows everyone to have like ownership of the process, yep, the project, and the brand, because the last thing you want at the end of the day is for people to be like, oh yeah, we brought this agency in and they did, I hate this, I don't like this. But like when you're involving your designers with the agency, it's like true collaboration. And now the agency's gone, right? So now you have you to work with.
Yeah, we have to live with it. And ultimately we're Sherpas of the brand. We have to push it forward and carry it and nurture it. But the reality is we become the owners. We're basically responsible for its success and its consistency. But I always go back to this notion that with the brand evolution, I don't think we've seen every iteration or design execution already. I hope and want to be surprised at how we can translate our brand so that it can continue to grow.
I totally agree as one of your agency partners, because we are also playing with your brand. And I'm seeing things like, oh, this music style, it works really well for the brand in this context. But what about this context? I wonder if that's going to be explored next. You know, like, it's not just design, it's illustration, yeah. It's motion, it's sound, it's everything.
Let's talk about the rollout. Sure. Let's talk about the strategy for the rollout. So huge brand, touch points everywhere, so many channels. And it was a rolling rollout, yep. Right? The old brand was a little more traditional. This one, full of gradients, full of color, completely different outside the logo. I was curious in the beginning, like, how are they going to coexist? And what was the strategy there, you know?
Yeah, great question. I mean, fortunately, the red in our palette didn't change. So there was equity in that. That's why we called it a brand evolution and not a refresh or redesign. It was a way to evolve. And so we knew that elements of our pre-existing brand was going to have to live alongside. That's just being realistic in a large organization. And I think the rollout, you do it strategically. You do it on what are the more front-facing things that are going to be seen in the industry, social.
That represent the brand.
Exactly. Right? Social, web, collateral. We have a really comprehensive brand center where all our collateral and guidelines, tone of voice, messaging, video is all organized and easy for agencies or for our team to roll things out on a rolling basis, to create things on a rolling basis. Because that's a practical reality with any large corporation or large business who have so many different teams and so many different deliverables. And I think that it allows you to also grow with that rollout. Like, you're discovering things as things are getting rolled out and you pivot to adjust. I think that's kind of like the greatest opportunity we have when it comes to a new brand, is you can actually take it in different directions quickly.
For me personally, it was like a real honor, honestly. We worked on one of the things that I led was the motion guidelines and the motion style. And it was like one of the most important projects in my career anyway. And it was super fun partnering with Chris Quimby and you and others. But that
and
was
really quick, Corey, I just have to give you a shout out, because I remember when you did that presentation and I was like, whoa, Corey is really talented. I had no idea.
Thanks. But it was an honor, for real. But what my key takeaway, one of the key takeaways, was we were building a foundation that could be built on. You know, we weren't solving for everything. It's like strategically trying not to solve for everything, but building something that can scale in a way that where you are anticipating learning over time and evolving it over time. And it's been fun, and it's fun watching it evolve and being a part of those decisions. I imagine it's the same thing on the design and brand side for you.
Oh, it's incredibly exciting, and we're constantly challenging ourselves. But with that, too, we also have created a lot of efficiency in how we are creating new assets. We did a ton of planning and preparation and building the templates and assets. Then when it came to rolling things out, we were able to quickly deliver things. But at the same time, by being receptive to feedback, by being receptive to how things are working and analyzing things as we roll them out, we're changing things kind of on the fly. So it's that really beautiful coexistence of like challenging yourself and challenging the brand and the new brand, but still maintaining true to what your original intention is. And I think that's really hard to do when there's so many moving parts. I mean, even in the motion and video, like there are so many different ways to execute on that. And when you set like kind of like your principles of design, like we had definitely found that by having a principle around the different aspects of our illustration and our typography, by having those principles, they were kind of like a guiding light for how we could approach something. So as long as we kind of ladder up to that, then we can push the envelope, then we can try new things, then we can extend it. And if that guiding principle is pushed to the kind of the brink, well, the intention is never to like break those principles, but I think you grow with them.
Design forecasting and planning is a big part of that, like design strategy forecasting. Like, because some principles are principles that you're not going to break, and you need to be able to forecast as you're building which ones are the ones that as you scale, probably you're going to want to evolve. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw that with you all. I've seen that in the past also with other brands. I've seen it break too. Like we've worked with brands where it does break, right? Because it's very hard to forecast design strategy, like to plan ahead and envision where it's going. Like I've seen brands that start in one place and end up somewhere completely different just from a color perspective, you know, like that there are some places you want guardrails and some places you want to have guardrails that you're anticipating flexing.
Guardrails is a good way to describe it. And it behooves you in a rebrand to have them. And prior to the brand evolution that we went through, we had guardrails. The thing is, though, sometimes it made sense to push past them in order to get to the place we are like today with the brand evolution. I feel like had we not pushed some of those boundaries, it may have been even more uncomfortable to get to where the brand is now. And that's really been the beauty of this journey, like this creative journey and being at Equinix and being a part of this process, is having the opportunity to see teams grow with the way that the design at Equinix has grown. It's actually really incredible and really exciting. And everyone on the team also has so much enthusiasm for ways we can push this, not just creatively, but also push things quickly. When you have too many constraints on a brand, it actually does the opposite and makes it harder to do things quickly, because to create things that look different from just like deliverable to deliverable, you're trying often to differentiate. But when the guardrails are too tight or too stringent or too constrained, you're kind of locked up and you can't push things. By having a really broad color palette and what I think is a really beautiful typeface in our new brand, we just have a lot of opportunities to express things.
And that's exactly where your role comes in, right? Like you were saying that you all are the Sherpas. Like when I saw the new brand, as excited I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a real challenge for you and for the team. Because like, where do you step in? Where do you say no? It's asking to be like experimented with, you know what I mean? And that's a challenge that even with more traditional brands, I've seen fall apart, because the brand leaders, the design leaders in-house, you let things go here, you let things go there. Yeah, that's a cool exploration. I like that direction. And before you know it, you lose like the octopus tentacles are all over the place. But I've seen you all manage well so far from everything I've seen. But
and communicate really well, because you had full, huge calls. My old company, I was in charge of communicating the rebrand to people, to the rest of the company as the marketing person. And I was so jealous that you had you and some of your colleagues rolling it out, explaining everything so thoughtfully and making sure everyone was involved, not just your internal teams, but all your agency partners as well.
Yeah, it was a way to communicate to the other aspects of our teams where the brand is, you know, started, where it's going, how it needs to communicate. At the end of every one of our sessions, we ended with like, how can you help? How can you support this? How can you be part of this process? And I also have to give credit to the Sherpa metaphor. That's a director of brand, Craig Terblanche. He's the one that used that term. So I got to give him some credit. By us acting as like as those shepherds of the brand, we ask other people in the company who aren't even in brand to adopt and kind of be part of that journey and support it. Everybody becomes responsible at Equinix for supporting and championing the brand.
What did you do internally to build champions and educate? Did you have like brown bag?
We had awareness sessions where we talk about the brand evolution. I mean, just having that dialogue and speaking to it is something I think any company should do. It really creating that dialogue and keeping an open door with those teams is what's going to continue to have people feel a part of that creative process to take ownership themselves.
Ronnie, is this the largest rebrand you've ever worked on?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt.
And you had to manage all of your internal teams and your vendors. Like, what was the strategy behind the vendor training?
Fortunately, we work with some really talented agencies like yourselves.
Like who? Oh, like us? Like,
yeah.
Stories Bureau?
Oh, yeah. Storiesbureau.com?
I think one of the testaments is that we have relationships that are not fly by night. We've developed relationships. Part of vendor training is giving them a peek behind the curtain in our process. And like I even talked about before, experimentation, like some things worked, some with some agencies that vendors that we worked with, some things didn't really fall in line with how we were seeing the brand evolution. So that uncomfortable breakage, you could say, was really effective in telling us, okay, this doesn't work. And a lot of it had to do with color because of how we pushed the envelope with our palette. I think we found, okay, this is the way the system is going to work successfully. And so how we work with vendors is it was just constantly ask them to try new things and to see how, you know, yeah, follow our guidelines, but it's okay to push the creative envelope and encourage them to. And I just looked at something even today and I was like, well, I could see that's it was actually the opposite. They were a little like quieter and more reserved with the way the design was executed. And I asked them, hey, let's push this, try this. It's about being very explicit with your feedback too. That's, I think, the most important part of being a creative is to articulate a way to change something. The worst, as you know, in like the design world is just getting feedback like, I don't like that and I don't know why.
And sometimes you have to help them articulate it too. You have to Absolutely. Give them options that are correspond to the generic word they're using that because they don't have the language. They haven't done the critiques, right?
Yeah, and in design school, you learn what those words are, what isn't working, the gestalt and all those, you know, design principles of why something doesn't work. And I think as a designer, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I'm still learning new ways to talk about a design. You're never done figuring out new ways to articulate or be delighted or be surprised or be even disappointed and saying, I think that could be pushed further. So
totally. Let me ask you something, Ronnie. So I found it interesting that you were talking about when you did the exploration initially, you went super wide and then you brought it back and you narrowed from like a very wide exploration. I'd be curious to know, like, what were your learnings? What were your takeaways? You know, if you're going to do this again or to people that are starting the process, right? You have a legacy brand that's been very successful, that's maybe conservative or maybe not. But you're going to evolve it.
I wouldn't even use the term conservative. I would just say it was a little expected and very simplified in that the palette was very minimalistic. I think the learnings I have was to stay true to some of that principle of minimalistic, in that we don't have superfluous things in our brand or extra ephemera or decoration. It's applying that same principle that actually worked for Equinix previously, but applying it in a broader way so that, yeah, even though our palette is extended, we've simplified a way to deliver the palette. Even though our illustration is now a big part of the story, the idea of simplify but not basic, right? Like clean and minimalistic, but still rich. So it's really been effective from a brand standpoint, because we're taking away the extra stuff. And when it came to like the brand or exploration and the agency that we were working with that was going too far, I think you have to also trust your gut with design sometimes. Like, it's what felt right, what felt like it made sense. And then when we started talking about it, it became more and more obvious.
It sounds like you found a kind of a brand truth. You found like the key, or a key equity, which in that case was kind of like simplicity and minimalism and no extraneous design ornaments and stuff. You changed the brand. You changed the foundational kind of design aspects of the brand,
mm-hmm.
color, texture, illustration. But that principle is what you carried through and used as effectively, like, that's what became a through line from old to new, not just in addition to the logo, right?
Yeah.
But like, you literally changed everything about the brand other than the logo, but you also kept the one truth, important truth.
Like the
right?
ethos of the brand.
Yeah. And with the brand, and actually part of the biggest aspect of the brand of Ocean was becoming more of an ethos-based brand. So having those principles kind of driving us, being more humanistic, like the strategic story also didn't change, and our positioning did not change. Like who
it's
we are.
It's almost like you aligned with yourselves.
Yes. Absolutely. Visually. Yeah. Yeah, we reminded ourselves how we needed to be represented, and the design, like, we just going back to the idea of a brand and how you like can grow with it. You're not done designing. Like, we're not done with the growth of this brand. It's really just the beginning, and I'm just thrilled to have been part of this process.
It's really super interesting as a creative director to look at a brand evolution or a rebrand and to think, not that you did this, but if you were to tear everything down, what is the truth? What is the ethos of the brand that we do want to carry forward? Even if everything, color, this, the motion, logo, you know, because something has to carry forward. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It can't be something completely different that has no attachment to what was. Maybe it's tone of voice, you know? Maybe it's the minimalism. Maybe it's the whatever. Maybe it's a color. Whatever it is, it's like, what is that core equity of what this brand is? And like, let's find the North Star, keep it, and then potentially just blow it all up around it. But
hopefully not.
Not that you did that, I'm saying, but like the idea of doing that as a strategy going into a rebrand for others, you know what I mean?
The brand evolution was strategy led. So a ton of strategy went into the brand evolution, not just because it made sense, but because really that's an imperative. You need tenets to fall back on. You need your tone of voice. You need your messaging. You need your story. And by applying design principles and looking at how that tone of voice comes across, the talking to humans, the way that Equinix talks to people in C-suite, down to developers, to engineers. I mean, that's what made the process so exciting and also complex, is we were not just talking to one persona. We're talking to many, many, many personas. And where is your common thread? Where's your common core? And we certainly had principles that we were able to really rely on as we were looking at design, looking at different ways to execute the brand. That's what made it a rewarding process, because we kept going back to that. we would keep going back to those tenets and saying, okay, does this fall into that? And then that allowed us to create the guidelines. That allowed us to create those design principles. It all kind of fit together kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. And I think that's what made it really a great and effective process.
And I've seen it. Like, I've seen it firsthand, and I appreciate it. You know, like, you all are very sophisticated creatives, you know, like the team that we work with there. We don't get a lot of, like, BS, you know? We don't get a lot of either don't change this because this is the rule or do change this because I like it like that, you know? Like, but I have seen some of the principles, the simplicity principles carry through when we want to take it maybe in a certain direction, and like, I know in my gut, maybe this is a little too far, but it's a really cool idea, you know, that like,
we're the envelope pushers agency.
But you all are thought partners and you kind of get it. Like, so when you're saying something, we know that it's coming from the right place and we know it ourselves too, but we're like, what do you think about this? You know what I mean? And it's interesting kind of seeing those guardrails and those principles manifest in your direction to us, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Like, when working with other agencies and working with designers, part of that feedback process and dialogue is literally pushing the envelope and at the same time staying true to those tenets. So it's not always easy to do that. I think one of the tenets, like, I kept going back to is, you know, witty, not silly. Like, those are, like, we have a couple of those that are, like, are kind of our tone of voice principles that apply not just to, like, copy and content, but even to design itself.
Totally. You gotta be the Sherpa.
A couple of things I heard today. One is communicate. I mean, Ronnie, you communicated with your team internally, you communicated with the organization, you communicated with your vendors, your agencies, your partners. So going through a big rebrand, communication is really important. The other thing I heard today was staying true to your ethos, and maybe there's like a little bit of a discovery process in that strategy work to find out what is true about our company, what do we want to communicate to our multiple personas, and how are we going to stay true visually and through tone of voice and all those other things that we've discussed. And then the third point that I heard you say today was, like, how can we do all this, keep it simple, nimble, but also push the envelope, like, which is a big ask, but because of your strategy and your communication, it, like, gives you that freedom to explore and experiment, not just now with the brand rollout, but as the brand progresses. And so kudos to you and your team.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
B2B Creatively is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather DeLeon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you like what you hear, go follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where Lisa, Corey, and the rest of the team are dishing out tips all week long. Or maybe check out storiesbureau.com, sign up for our newsletter, and that'll keep you up to date on all the latest trends and best practices in the B2B creative, design, and marketing worlds. Oh, and of course, follow us on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform to get more creative convos like this delivered straight to your feed every month. That's it for this one. So until next time, thanks for listening.